Weddings and funerals are among life's milestones. They're at the opposite end of life experience. A wedding marks the beginning of a new life together, and a funeral marks the ending of life. Weddings and funerals, beginnings and endings. But where Jesus is concerned, beginnings and endings aren't always exactly as they first appear. Not too many weeks ago, we were here for the first of what are called Jesus' signs. Other gospel writers refer to them as miracles, but John calls them signs because they indicate who Jesus is and what he's about. And the first of those signs took place at a wedding. Wedding at Cana in Galilee, which threatened to end prematurely. But Jesus interceded and intervened and blew the lid off that celebration. He made so much wine, I don't think they've run out of it yet in Cana. And now here we have a funeral of sorts. Lazarus, one of Jesus' closest friends, has died. And what Jesus does at the tomb of Lazarus is an extraordinary thing. It's an absolutely extraordinary thing. So this marks not only the... I'll tell you that in a minute. But in this place, we have three things happening. The beginning, we can understand this as the end of the beginning, as the beginning of the end, and the end of the end. And here's what I mean by that. Now, there are seven signs at the beginning of John's gospel account. This is the seventh, so it's the end of the beginning. From this point, it's a turning point. He's turning toward the cross, Jerusalem, which will bring about his own death. It's also the beginning of the end, because on the other side of this, the authorities are so inflamed, not only by what Jesus has done, but by more than that, by the response to him, that they vow that they will put Jesus to death. And if you read on into chapter 12, they're going to kill Lazarus too. It's like, really? Hasn't that already proven ineffective? But we never know exactly what happens there. And it is also the end of the end, because death, while real, is no longer permanent. It's no longer final. And this prefigures what Jesus himself will experience and accomplish on the other side of his own death. So, I mentioned that this is kind of the turning point, the move between signs of who Jesus is and the work that he's about to accomplish. And it's an extraordinary story. I'm not going to reread all 44 verses, but just to summarize, Jesus begins by waiting when he hears that Lazarus is ill. I mean, this by itself is unusual. Jesus is quick to respond when people ask for healing. He's healed strangers. Why wouldn't he heal one of his closest friends? And the reason is, Jesus says, this is so that God's glory might be revealed even more fully. The healing is a big deal to those being healed, but this is an extraordinary thing, not only for Lazarus and Mary and Martha, but for all who are there. And so the disciples, as usual, are slow to get it. He says, Lazarus is asleep, but I'm going to go wake him up. And they say, Lord, I'm sure he can wake himself up. He said, no, he's died. Lazarus has died. And he goes into hostile territory. You know, Thomas, who's always, you know, you're going to see these disciples, they're true to their character. Thomas is always a little bit reluctant. And he's just kind of fatalistic about it. Well, if we go with him, we're going to die too. But they go. And Martha meets Jesus outside of town. Now, if you've heard the stories of Mary and Martha before, you remember Martha's the one who works in the kitchen while Mary sits at Jesus' feet. And Martha complains about that time. And Jesus says, no, Mary's really getting the better part of the deal because I'm not going to be with you forever. I'm here now. Mary's approach gets you more of me, gets her more of me. But now here, this is Martha's turn to shine. Because Mary's, you know, a little immobilized back at home, but Martha is up and at him, and she has this encounter with Jesus, which is really what the heart of this story is about. So just like last week, the man born blind, you know, it was about the man born blind, but the movement, the tension in the story was in the response of his parents, in the response of the Pharisees. Well, here the movement of the story, even though it's Lazarus who's going to be raised, it's here in this moment with Jesus and Martha. And she's pretty sharp with him initially, as is Mary. Lord, if you'd been here, this wouldn't have happened. We would not have been in this, we would not be in this place if you'd come when you got the word. And Jesus says, well, your brother's going to rise again. And Martha's answer communicates the core Jewish belief of that time, which was that there would be a general resurrection of all of God's faithful people at a time when God was going to reassert his authority in the world and vindicate Israel. So that's what she says. Well, of course he's going to rise again at the resurrection of the dead when we all rise again. And Jesus says, no, you're not getting it. I am. Anytime he says I am, he's echoing God's words to Moses in the Old Testament. I am the resurrection and the life. Those who trust me, though they die, yet will live. And those who live and trust me will never die. And then he asks, do you believe? Do you believe this, what I just told you? And she says, yes, Lord, I believe. Yes, Lord, I believe. He has a similar encounter with Mary, although shorter. And here, you know, Jesus is himself deeply personally moved by this death. He's fully human. One of his closest friends has died. He knows he could have prevented it. He knows what he's going to do on the other side of it, but he's connecting to the sadness, the profound grief around him. And they go to the tomb. They go to the tomb, and Jesus says, roll the stone away. It was Mary or Martha says, Lord, we don't embalm. You know, it's been 4 days. Not going to be so pretty. Jesus ignores it, calls Lazarus out. Lazarus walks out of the tomb. Jesus invites him to be unbound. So we're in this turning point now of the movement toward the cross, the way of the cross. Because on the other side of this, it's not so well received by the authorities. Jesus' death becomes inevitable. And so for the next several weeks, we're going to be looking at what are the dimensions of this way of the cross. Not only the way toward the cross, but what is a life centered around the death and resurrection of Jesus look like? And today that theme is trust. Trust. As Jesus invites Martha to trust, what are the dimensions of that trust? First of all, it's bigger than one person. So what I mean by that, if there's something that needs to be accomplished and I know I can do it on my own, we don't really think about trust. We call that confidence. If I can do it on my own, it's confidence. But trust requires another. And second dimension of trust is it's relational. And it doesn't generally just drop in all at once. It gets built over time. So when I counsel couples who are preparing for marriage, I'll tell them, trust builds slowly and gradually, but it leaves quickly. So trust builds gradually. And in this case, the trust that Martha had for Jesus was built over all the years that he had come to Jerusalem for the pilgrimage festivals and stayed in their home. In much the same way, you might have friends who come in from out of town to do something in the city. You say, you don't go, don't eat hotel food. You know, come stay here with us. That was the relationship that built trust over time between Martha and Jesus. But also, in order for trust to be operative, we need to be in kind of an extreme moment. It can't be just the everyday. The everyday things we can handle. But here, Jesus encounters Mary and Martha, and of course Lazarus, at the time of their deepest need. So trust is essential during the times of our deepest need. And finally, and related to that, trust pulls us forward, or allows Jesus to pull us forward through the times of our deepest need, where we can see things that otherwise we would not even notice. When we trust in Jesus, he pulls us to see possibilities that aren't immediately visible and present. So let's jump to today. Here we are, we've heard this long story, and my guess is in a room this size, we've got some of us in different places. Some of us might be in the time of our deepest need. Life has never been more painful, more difficult, more challenging than it is right now. And this story connects up pretty directly. But for others of us, it's not a time of our deepest need. It's pretty much another day. And so where's the relevance for us? I would say if that's your place, begin or continue to build the trust so that when you come to a time of deep need, you're able to be pulled forward by Jesus. And how do we do that? How do we build the relationship over time? Well, you're doing it by being here. This is where God's promises are spoken. We grow in trust of Jesus as we hear his promises spoken to us in this place. We grow in trust of him when we gather around his table, where he is both host and the main course. And we grow in trust of Jesus when we gather here with his body, all of us together, as we walk, run, skip, dance, and stumble through life together. So that takes care of this. But how do we build and sustain that relationship in between times here? The best way to do it is to hear Jesus' own words and to get to know him through what is said by him and about him in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You've heard me say this before. I believe it to be true. If you spend the time it takes to read one chapter of the Gospels each day, and it's not so you know the stories and you know the differences in the accounts, that it's like spending time with someone who you love. You don't say, well, you know, I was with my best friend last year. I don't need to be with him again. I was with my wife last month. I don't need to be with her again. It's all about the time. And when we do that, we find that the trust builds. And when we get to times of deepest need or even moderate need, we can see things that otherwise would not be apparent. We're also today in our second to last week of our capital appeal called Yes And. And next Sunday is Commitment Sunday. And trust has a lot to do with that as well. First of all, it's something beyond that which any of us can do on our own. Unless someone woke up this morning and said, you know, I've got $3.25 million that I've really been looking to give away. We can't do it on our own. It comes out of a relationship that's been building over time. Do we trust that the God who provides for us will continue to provide for us? as we make our commitments. Now, I think that it falls a little short on this being a time of our deepest need. And we can't say as atonement, this moment now is the time of our deepest need. We're looking at a story that involves the resurrection of the dead. But we're talking about the reduction of the debt. Just making sure you're still with me. But it's important, and it does require trust in order for us to do it. Because we're asking each one of us to make our most generous gift. And if it's going to be our most generous gift, it's going to go beyond that which we can just do on our own without a thought. It takes a lot of trust to give our most generous gift. And last, Jesus pulls us into seeing possibilities that might not otherwise be immediately visible. It's true in our own giving. I heard over and over and over again from our people who we interviewed for the video clips, when I did this in the prior appeals, I found that I had more than I'd realized. Only trust gets you there. And the last piece is, we're doing this in order that those far from us, those near to us, those presently here, and those yet unborn might hear and receive the promises of the one who raised Lazarus from the dead and who was himself raised from death, putting an end to the end. Amen.